Hello and welcome to Getaway Day. This is episode 101. That's a mouthful. My name is Gautam. His name is Mason. And today we're going to talk about our first almost full week of baseball of the 2023 season. How's it going, Mason?
Not too bad. Was in St. Louis all weekend, watched a couple of games there, went to opening day. Fantastic. What I will say before we get into the conversation is that some of the differences I'm seeing already, both in like the Cardinals team individually and the league overall, is as black and white as Cruella DeVille's hair from last year. Like it's pretty,
okay,
pretty stark.
You know, okay. If you just drop that there, like we have to go to that now. So, So you went to opening day in St. Louis against the Blue Jays. Give us a little taste of what that experience was like and go.
So this has now been my second opening day that I have been to. So I went with my cousin Derek. If you guys watch the Twitch chat here, Cards Baseball 7 or something, I think is what it is. But yeah, so we've started doing this as an every year thing, and that's kind of our plan going forward. Last year was Albert Pujols and Yadier Molina's final opening day. Their last opening day with Waino as a group, and so they did a big thing with that. That was really cool. This year was entirely different because, yes, it's Waino's last opening day, and they did make a deal about that. Like, they let Waino sing the national anthem, which was actually really good. I was impressed. But this year felt like it was more about the young core that's coming up. And so from last year to this year, it's like, this is the end of an era. We don't really truly know what's coming next, to here's what's next. And what's next is Jordan Walker made his opening day debut for his major league debut. Got two base hits, I think.
At least one.
I think he had two. I think he had an infield hit, and I think he had a legitimate, like, put it into the outfield base single. And that was really, really cool to see. Getting to see Gorman back in the lineup there along with Newt, and just some of the changes to the lineup this year. It was really, really fun to watch. And then throughout the weekend, you then see like Gorman go off, hit two home runs in a game on Sunday. You see Alec Burleson hit a home run in the game on Saturday. And you see this youth, and it's an entirely different energy. And that is kind of how I feel about the league as a whole right now. Yes.
One hit. One for five. One hit for Walker. Yeah.
Did he have two on Saturday?
I don't know.
He might have. I just watched him.
Navigated myself to the box score of opening day because that was quite the game, and I'm sure you have some thoughts on what actually unfolded during that game.
Yeah, so like I said, everything feels different this year, and the biggest thing that I noticed, especially in that game, like if you go look at the box score, you'll see what I mean. There were a lot of base hits. As the guy that was sitting directly behind me pointed out, every single time there was another hit, there's 30 hits. There's 30 hits in this game. He did that for 30, 31, 32, 33, 34. Like, we get the point, dude. We can count. But that's a lot of hits. Like, he wasn't wrong to be surprised by that. It was just annoying that he did it every time. But yeah, like we were seeing balls that would have been eaten up by the shift last year. Like Brendan Donovan, I think, had a single between the first baseman and second baseman. Tommy Edman had a single right there. We were seeing little bloop singles into shallow center that I don't think would have gotten there. I think the Blue Jays in that game alone had 10 hits that were on batted balls under 75 mile an hour, which is incredibly wild. They had 13 balls hit like that. 10 of them landed for hits. That is not a thing that's going to hold true for the course of the season. But it definitely showed you that the way that they have started limiting the shift, not getting rid of it entirely, but limiting it, did make a big difference as far as balls landing in play. So
yeah, totally agree. Saw that all weekend long with lots of balls reaching the outfield in places that in the last 5+, 5-10 years would have been eaten up by the shift. For me, it's just a little bit of a getting used to period because, you know, I see the batted ball and I expect it to get swallowed up and it's not. So I'll have to remember what baseball was when I wasn't such a big fan, I guess.
Yeah, it's really cool for me to see because it's like, I've been really blessed being a Cardinal fan, and I don't think anyone's going to argue that. Like, we've had fantastic defenders. Just thinking back even to the MV3, when Albert was the best defensive first baseman at the time, Scott Rolen, who just got elected into the Hall of Fame, and Jim Edmonds in center, all those guys had, like, incredible range for their positions. And so, like, I get to see that again, but obviously it's different people and people aren't used to have that range anymore. So it's going to be interesting getting back to where people have that agility and that range to get to some of these balls. So,
yeah, totally. I guess any other thoughts from that opening game before we go on to some other games?
Yes. One very specific thought. So I don't usually get the like unique foods that they make every year at the different stadiums, but I think this might be the year that I start trying them. Cause on opening day, we're sitting there and we were starting to get a little peckish cause it was the end of like a freaking 4.5 hour game or something stupid. Just with as many hits, it was a long game. And the Cardinals had this chicken sandwich from Shaq's Hot Chicken. It's a Nashville hot chicken on a red donut that has a maple bacon glaze. And then it has a chipotle mayo on it or sauce on it. It was awesome.
Who can say no to that? That sounds amazing.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like the first time that I've gone to a game at Busch Stadium and not just gotten nachos. Like, it was good.
Yeah.
So I think this is going to be the year that as we go to different stadiums, I'm trying the unique foods.
Yeah, when we go to Wrigley Field next month, I think they've got a whole bunch of new food options. So we'll have to try some new food.
Is that on our single day doubleheader?
Yep.
Oh, yeah. We're going to be doing a lot of stuff with that, I think, because that's going to be fun. We're going to a White Sox and Cubs game in the same day.
Going to be awesome. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, so while you were watching opening day in St. Louis, other opening days were going on all around Major League Baseball. I just had some other thoughts that I figured I just wrote them down so I'd remember them for this podcast. And what better way to start the 2023 season than for Aaron Judge to hit a home run, the first home run of the season, off Logan Webb in the first inning, which was a bomb to dead center. So, I mean, guy picked up right where he left off.
So, a question.
Yeah.
Did he hit one in 2022 on opening day? Because if not, I vote that we change it so that he had 63 home runs because technically it would still only be 162 games that he did it in.
Yeah, that's true. I do not know if he hit a home run on opening day 22.
Yeah. Another kind of cool home run feat that I totally just remembered now. There is a player who has now hit home runs on 4 consecutive opening days. Can you tell me who that player is?
Ooh, that's a good one. 4 consecutive opening days.
Mm-hmm. He's the third one ever on his team to do it. He's the only active player left on the team that's done it. And I got to watch it.
Well, I'm looking at the box score, so I'll cheat a little bit here. And say that it was George Springer.
It was not George Springer.
Who was it?
Tyler O'Neill.
Oh, I never would have guessed that.
Yeah, I thought that was an interesting stat too. Derek and I did place a couple bets for opening day. We picked him to hit his home run, so paid out $8. It was great.
Nice. Yeah, and then. Another really cool matchup that happened was Hunter Green versus O'Neill Cruz. This is what we've been waiting for all offseason when we didn't have baseball, power versus power. This is a matchup like this is why we watch these games, you know. Hunter Green just pumping 100 mile per hour fastballs on this specific pitch to O'Neill Cruz was 102 miles per hour. And O'Neill Cruz took it out of the ballpark and hit the ball at 111 miles per hour. I mean, that's just so amazing to me on both sides of the thing.
So I will say, anyone who can turn on a 102 fastball is going to probably hit it over 100 pretty easily. Because, like, you're not going to lose velocity turning it around.
That's true.
So the fact that he didn't hit it 120 surprises me. I think that's mostly Hunter Green's doing. I don't think that that has anything to do with O'Neill Cruz's power.
Until you remember that O'Neill Cruz has hit a ball 120.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm not saying that he can't do it. I'm just saying that in this particular batted ball instance, I think all that velo came from Hunter Green.
Yeah. And then Adley Rutschman went 5 for 5 in his first opening day with the Orioles. And that was incredible. Hit a home run. He also had a walk in the game. So on base 6 times. And we're going to talk a little bit.
First catcher to be on base 6 times on opening day since 1901.
Wow. Who was that catcher?
I don't remember. Let me. I think that was Sarah Langs that tweeted that. So give me just 1 minute and I'll find it.
But yeah, awesome star for Rutschman. He seems like he's going to be in MVP conversations, if not this year, in the very near future. Like, this guy looks like an absolute superstar on both sides of the game. Very excited for how the Orioles kind of use him. And Grayson Rodriguez has been promoted, making his first start tomorrow. So that's kind of the future of Orioles baseball right there.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to see him, Gunnar, Adley, and Ryan Mountcastle all in the field together. I think that's a core that I think a lot of people have been looking forward to for a long time. So it's going to be fun, I think, for Orioles fans here this year.
Yep.
I think it's given me pretty heavy, like, 2021 Mariners vibes.
Yeah, I could see that. We just got to see some pitching here. So Grayson might be the first step in that.
Yeah. Hopefully he's the first step, because if he's the last step, yikes.
Mm-hmm.
What was the stat I was looking for?
The first catcher to go get on base 6 times since 1901.
Oh. Yeah, so I need to be down in. I'm still in April. Sarah has tweeted a lot so far this month.
Baseball is the best.
Yes, it is.
Okay, so I thought we'd take a little bit of time here to look into some stats leaders here. I think they could lead to some interesting conversations. Obviously, it's way, way, way too early to be making any definitive judgments about anything, but we might just do that here.
I will be making definitive statements about everything.
Yeah, the Twins are not going to lose a game this season.
Nope, neither are the Rays. It's going to be really awkward when they play each other.
It is. So let's just take a look at these stats leaders and see what we can say at this point about them. So the first one's home runs. And the actual home run leader now is Brian Reynolds, who hit his 4th home run today. But I want to talk about Joey Gallo, who has 3 home runs. He was the leader coming into today. Joey Gallo is getting a fresh start with the Twins. He signed a 1-year deal, playing some outfield for them. He had a terrible season last year between the Yankees and the Dodgers. But Joey Gallo has been a premium power source for years. So it's really not that surprising that he has 3 home runs. But do you think Joey Gallo can keep it up this season and actually get back to his old ways?
Sorry, I finally found the tweet I was looking for. What was the question?
The question is about Joey Gallo.
Oh, can he get back to his old ways? I don't know. Yes. I think the answer is yes for a couple very specific reasons. One, his entire game has always been pure power. Like, there has not been a batting average, like a high batting average component to Joey Gallo's play in the past. So I wouldn't be surprised to see that power come back and him still have a pretty low batting average. I think some of the changes, especially limiting the shift, he kind of got hit by the shift pretty hard. So I would expect to see some more balls get through and his average not be sub 200. Like, I think it probably could have been here the last couple of years and wouldn't have shocked me. Yeah. So yeah, I think with some of the changes we've seen and some of the ways that the game is already starting to kind of adapt to the new rules, I could see Joey Gallo having a pretty solid season and getting back to a 25, 30 home run guy with a 230 batting average. So
230 batting average, that's the part that if he does that, then you're talking about a 40 home run season, which is not so crazy for Joey Gallo. He's done it he's had a 41 home run season, a 40 home run season, a 38 home run season. His best batting average was 253. Every other year has been 209 or below. So batting average, not a strong suit. OBP, that's a different story. Guy still gets on base, walks a lot, and the power is insane still.
Real quick, I found the answer on
who is it?
So 1901 was just when they started tracking. So technically he was the first one to do it in tracked statistics. However, he is the fifth catcher since 1901 to reach base safely five times, with Jason Varitek, Todd Hundley, Yogi Berra, and Ray Schalk.
Cool. So who is the guy that did it six times?
No one. Adley was the first.
Oh, he was the first. Okay.
Yeah, because 1901 was just when stats like for stuff like that started being readily available.
Got it.
So it's as far back as we can track it.
Well, thanks for finding that answer, I guess.
You're welcome.
Yeah. And then just quick side note on Brian Reynolds. Like, is Brian Reynolds trying to play himself out of Pittsburgh? Because he's been in negotiations for a contract extension with the Pirates. Seems like they're hung up on whether he'll have a player option in that deal. Pirates don't want to give that up. And he kind of wants one. So
yeah, and I mean, why shouldn't he want one?
Yeah.
Like, especially with the contract that they're talking, like, they've only been talking
it's very reasonable. It's not even player friendly at all.
Yeah, I was gonna say they were talking about like $100 million contract max.
Roughly, yeah.
For like 4 years.
I think more than 4 years.
Like, or five or something. Yeah. But like, that is an incredibly team friendly deal already. And so he's taking a hit to stay with a team that's been bad for basically his entire career so far. He's been the guy. They have some pieces coming up, but they have not shown that they're going to go all in to actually win. They're just kind of banking on getting lucky. If he sticks around, Cabrian pops off and O'Neill Cruz continues to be really good. And they just happen to like get Rich Hill to be a Cy Young somehow at the age of 45. So like, if I were Brian Reynolds, I wouldn't settle for this without a player opt out either. I'm not sure that I would be terribly entertained with the negotiating with that team in general. Like, yes, it's $100 million. That's a lot of money, but he's a free agent at the end of the year.
No, he's still got several years left. Like two.
Oh, does he?
Yeah.
Oh shit. Yeah. That's never mind. Then it's a little bit more of a, how do you strong arm them into trading you?
Yeah. The Pirates kind of have the power there, but they also shouldn't lose Brian Reynolds over this. If the opt out is the hang up on the deal, like, it, they should get this done, but they're the Pirates. They have shown consistently that they do not get these kind of deals done.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. Bob Nutting's an idiot. So
yeah.
Have we done a full like bash the Pirates episode yet? Or have we only done the Rockies and the Orioles?
That might be coming soon in 2023. Let's write that down.
All right. Notes. bash the Pirates.
Another guy kind of in the Joey Gallo mold, Joey Gallo light, you could call him, Adam Duvall, has joined the Red Sox, and he is off to some kind of ridiculous start. Like, he has 2 home runs. I'm trying to pull up his numbers here. He had 2 home runs in the same game in a ridiculous comeback victory for the Red Sox against the Orioles. His season number is 588, 650, 1235 slugging percentage over his 4 games. And he leads the league in runs with 7 to this point. And this is less about Adam Duvall and more about kind of what I saw out of the Red Sox lineup this opening week. They were unstoppable. It wasn't Fenway Park, so, you know, ballpark helps a little bit. But up and down the lineup, all their guys were just moving the line, getting on base, getting hits. Have we underestimated the Red Sox lineup?
Maybe, but this is still a lineup that on paper is not thrilling. Like, I'm getting it pulled up again here. But, like, Duvall is a very solid player. Masataka Yoshida, he could be incredibly good. Devers is really good. If Verdugo can be back to his old self, okay, yeah. I could see them having, like, a top 4 that are all really, really solid. I still don't know what we're going to get out of Justin Turner. I still don't know that Christian Arroyo and Reese McGuire are even serviceable major league starters. Bench guys, yeah, absolutely, sure. Starters, probably not. And then that leaves you with Tristan Casas, who is a rookie that hasn't had much time at the major league level. And then Kike, who, yeah, I think Kike's still a decent bat. He's not quite as good as he was 3-4 years ago with the Dodgers, but still a really good player. So I don't know. Like, I still don't see them being this unstoppable force lineup. Like, I feel like that might be just like a first series Orioles pitching at Fenway fluke. Like,
yeah.
I think they could be solid. I don't think they're a good lineup.
That's fair. Yeah. I think I would say they're not bad. They're above average. They're maybe not like what they showed. They're obviously not what they showed this weekend, but the guy like Duvall, I think he's perfect for Fenway Park. I mean, Adam Duvall hit 38 home runs just 2 years ago for the Braves and the Marlins. So with the short left field with the monster, I mean, who's to stop him from hitting 30-plus home runs again this year? And that, I think that changes kind of what this lineup can do, because they don't have a whole lot of other power sources. They got a bunch of guys that can get on base and hit for average in Yoshida, Turner, Devers, Verdugo. So those guys get on base.
Well, and I think that's where Tristan Casas is a really important piece of this team, because he is that power that they need. The question is, can he unlock that in his rookie season?
Totally, yeah. No. I think he's a huge key to the lineup.
So my question is, so this is a team that I thought Adalberto Mondesi was going to be their shortstop. Apparently, he's already on the 60-day.
Yeah.
Was he injured when they got him?
Yes, he was. He tore his ACL last year.
Okay, so when's he expected to be back?
I don't know. I was kind of surprised. I thought he would be back like sooner, because he tore his ACL last April. So I thought he'd be back by now, but I guess maybe it's going slow.
Yeah. But because I was just thinking about that, and like, even once you get him, I mean, you move Kike to second, Mondesi at short, but that, I don't really think that improves your lineup all that much.
No, that's not for the lineup at all. I think that's more, that would help the defense.
Yeah, that's true.
So, and that was what we talked about in our preview of the Red Sox, where we were kind of ripping them for their up the middle alignment with Duvall playing center, Kike playing shortstop, kind of having guys out of position. And that could still be a serious issue for them going forward. Yeah. But
See, they do have Raimel Tapia that they could throw out there in center if they really need defense, though.
I don't really think he's a great center field defender either.
All right, Rob Refsnyder.
Yeah. Okay, so moving along here to the average category, where Adam Duvall's hitting .588, but another guy who's hitting .588 is Dansby Swanson, who had 10 hits in his first four games with the Cubs. So you can't really think of a better way to start, you know, your 7-year contract with the Cubs.
Yeah, that's a great way to do it. Out of his 10 hits, 8 of them are singles. I think Cubs fans are probably really hoping that over time more of those turn into doubles, because Dansby's not slow by any chance or by any means. He's not fast, but he's not slow.
Yeah, he's been hitting the ball very hard all around the field. I think the doubles and the home runs are easily going to be coming. I think he looks, obviously this is like very, you know, anecdotal, but he looks very comfortable, and a lot of players have kind of an adjustment period, especially when they sign like giant contracts. Seems like he's avoided that at least initially. What do you think about like big money contract guys in their first month of the first season?
So as we've talked about here, especially last year and the year before that, kind of with Goldie and Nato and how that's kind of gone, like it always seems like especially a superstar's first season with a new team, you really like expect them to be like continue their elite production, whatever. And then if they take a down year, a lot of people say, oh, they're washed, but it's like, no, that's a big adjustment. So the fact that he is coming in and right off the bat, he's got 10 hits and 18 plate appearances, and he like just looks comfortable and happy, I think that is huge. Like this is kind of even more anecdotal than just saying he looks comfortable, but there's people that I've seen that are not Cubs fans that are just on Twitter going, as much as I hate to say it, Dansby Swanson looks like a Cub. Like, I realize that's kind of a weird thing to say, because, like, what does that actually mean? But, like, he looks comfortable being in the lineup. He looks like he's happy being there. Like, he likes being there with the fans, and he's playing well. So, like, everything seems to be coming together, where it's just like, yeah, you'd think he's been there for a long time. He's playing well. He's there with the fans. Like, they like him. He likes them, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that just kind of goes to show the confidence that he's showing right now, especially at the plate. So seeing his results be mostly singles right now, he does also have a walk. Like, at some point, you're definitely going to see those start translating into more doubles, maybe a triple, some home runs. But, I mean, hey, if you get eight singles in the first week of the season, it's a pretty good streak. So,
yeah, and the defense has been phenomenal to start the year, too. That up-the-middle defense of the Cubs is looking excellent with Horner and Swanson. At one point in the weekend, after the Cubs had faced Brandon Woodruff and Corbin Burnes in the first two games, basically Ian Happ and Dansby Swanson had almost all the hits that the Cubs had the entire season. And the rest of the team had 2 hits combined in like 47 plate appearances or something.
That sounds like the Cubs I was expecting this year.
Yeah, they have like a couple good players. The rest are very hit or miss.
So just kind of talking about the average leaderboard in general right now, there is a couple things here that I'm noticing that they make a lot of sense. So obviously,
I think Luis Arraez is up there, right?
Yep. That's actually exactly what I was about to say. Wander Franco, who as a prospect had an elite hit tool, and Luis Arraez are both hitting about .524 for Arraez, .533 for Wander through about 17 to 22 plate appearances for the two of them, which obviously incredibly low sample size. They're definitely not going to be hitting over .500 much past about the middle of next week, probably.
Those are the guys that are going to end up at the top of the leaderboard by the end of the season.
That's last year's batting champion and a prospect who that's what he was known for.
And like, last year he showed that he had an elite hit tool and he basically never struck out. The only guy who struck out less than him was Arias, I think.
Yeah. And so seeing these two guys up here, it's not shocking, but it does make you feel a little bit more comfortable that, like, okay, things are going a little bit how we expect. Because it's not everything isn't all topsy-turvy where you've got Joey Gallo, who's got a 588 batting average and all this stuff. Like,
Joey Gallo is hitting over 300, which is basically like a 500 average for him.
True. But I think we're getting to the, I don't want to say we're getting to the point, because we're definitely way too early for that point. As we go through, we're going to start to see the leaderboards normalize. After about 30 games, I think is probably where we can start going, okay, yeah, this is inappropriate sample size for a lot of these players, and kind of talk about it that way. But we are seeing trends that are going towards the normalization. So
yeah,
we could say pretty much whatever we want, but the real answers are also here pretty close to the top.
Yeah, that's so super interesting that just in 4 or 5 games, you already see the guys you expect to be at the top be at the top. And that's just shows how good those guys are.
Yeah. Yeah, and then you've also got some guys in here that don't really make a whole lot of sense. Yoan Moncada, Nolan Gorman, Alec Bohm, they're in the top 15. And those are guys that they're really probably going to be more power than average ultimately at the end of the year.
Bohm could hit for a good average.
You think so?
Yeah.
Gorman, I don't think he's going to hit for a great average. He's definitely a Joey Gallo type with a better average than Gallo, I think. But yeah, he's definitely not a, 500 hitter like he's showing right now. So.
Yeah. Another interesting one. A lot of people are talking about this, the stolen bases. We've seen success rates go way up from the beginning of the season last year. It was around 67% through the first 4 days of the season. Now we're at 80% with roughly double the number of attempts as last year. So lots of people are running, trying to take advantage of these new rules. We see Jorge Mateo and Cedric Mullins both with 4 steals each. Miles Straw also has 4 steals. So these fast guys are the first guys that are kind of giving it a shot. I think we might even see some of these less fast guys start taking off from here. What do you think about that?
Yeah, so this one's really, really interesting to me, especially because there's a few different rules that were implemented this year to kind of address this. Because as you mentioned, in 2022 through the first 4 games, we saw 29 steals in 43 attempts for a 67% success rate. This year through 4 games, which is through
Sunday. Yeah.
Yes, because this was before games started yesterday is when Passan tweeted this. So through Sunday, we had 70 steals. So more than twice as many steals on 84 attempts, which is less than double. So that takes the success rate up to 83.3%. I think you said as of this morning it was actually 84 steals on 100 attempts. Yes. So we're seeing a lot more steals a lot sooner, and which with the bigger bases, with the pickoff attempt limitations, with like the shift being limited, which it doesn't really affect too much of coverage on pickoffs and throwing out runners necessarily. But like there's a lot of these little rule changes that I think are adding up to people trying it more. And so far we're seeing a lot of early success. And like you said, it's out of the big guys that we expect, your Mullins, your Jorge Mateos. I think you're going to start to see your kind of second level of speed threats come in and try it. So you're going to see more Tommy Edman. You're going to see more Bobby Witt Jr. You're going to see more guys like this.
Those guys aren't really second tier, though, right? Guys are like prolific base stealers already.
That's fair. Okay, so who's a second tier guy that Christian Yelich?
I'm thinking like the guys that steal like roughly like 10 bases a year. So I'm thinking like a guy like Ian Happ would be like a guy that could take advantage of these rules.
Yeah, so if the success rate for the fast guys is going up on a lot higher number of attempts, like we're going to start seeing your Ian Happ probably go, okay, so my chances are probably higher too. And if he was confident in himself to steal 10 bases last year,
he could steal 15.
Maybe he's going to steal 15 or 20 if he starts soon. So we'll start to see that happen. And as that happens, you're probably going to see success rate drop a little bit. Wouldn't be shocked to see that normalize out. But I mean, if it is 75% this year for success rate, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, there's one specific pitcher that's already had a major problem with base stealers. That's Noah Syndergaard. He's like the worst in the league at giving up stolen bases. And he pitched the other day, like Saturday or Sunday, I think. And Corbin Carroll is on first base. Corbin Carroll might be the fastest guy in the league right now. He took second and he took third, and there were not throws on either of those stolen base attempts. So Noah Syndergaard is going to need to figure something out, because he's going to get taken advantage of all year if he doesn't do something. And that kind of leads into what I want to ask you, like, how do catchers and pitchers counteract this? Because inevitably they will. I don't think we're going to see an 83% success rate continue all year. I think it's going to drop down a little bit. But how?
That's a good question. I think you're going to start seeing a lot more game planning around pickoff attempts to try and discourage people from stealing. So they're going to be a little bit more, instead of just looking over and going, that guy's kind of far off, I'm going to pick off. I think it's going to be a bit more, when does this guy like to steal? Okay, let's try and pick off here and actually use that as a competitive advantage, as opposed to just what I think they've been doing for the most part, which is just throwing over to make sure or to get a guy back if they think he's straying too far from the base. I mean, I think there was more to it than that in the past, but that's probably the simple way to describe it. The other thing is, I kind of wonder if catchers are going to start changing their stance to increase their pop time or to decrease their pop time.
Yeah, we've seen that kind of recently in the, like, where they basically don't care as much about the blocking aspect and the, you know, catching the ball aspect. It's like sitting in a position where they can get ready to throw as quick as possible. But that could be part of it. Yeah.
Yeah, because like you see a lot of guys who they're like basically down on one knee with their other leg kind of out far so that they could drop to block pretty quickly. I think you might see some of that disappear so that they're in a bit more of a ready position. So, which is really going to hurt some of these guys who have terrible blocking skills but great arms, because you're probably going to see more pass balls. You're going to see more wild pitches.
Yeah.
If they change their stance.
The pickoff thing is so interesting because the pitchers almost don't want to do the second pickoff, because then the runner has such a high incentive to run because they know that the pitcher is not really going to want to go over the third time because they could get called for this balk.
Yeah.
So I guess I think I asked you this like before the season started about if anyone was going to steal like 50 bases or like 60 bases or something. Does this first week give you any hope of that happening or not really? Cause really people are making it like a big deal, but the number of attempts is not like a crazy increase from last year. It's like 1.3 attempts per game, like for both teams in a game, to 1.6 through the first like four games of the season. So
it's, I mean, not, yes, like, but that's drastic. that's also averaged across all players. So your attempts are up significantly for certain types of guys, I think. And so I think the chances of us getting from a 41 steal John Birdie in 2022 to say a 50 steal Cedric Mullins in 2023, I don't think that's that crazy. I think what we're seeing right now is kind of showing that very well could happen. The commercial that you and I watched that was kind of explaining the rule changes, and it was Vogie. Is he going to try and steal? That's not going to happen. You're not going to see Daniel Vogelbach go out here and steal 50 bases. You shouldn't expect him to steal five. So, but I do think that you'll see a guy get 45, 50 steals. And I think that it's obviously going to have to be one of these guys who has everyday play time and already stole a lot. So it's going to be a Trey Turner. It's going to be a Cedric Mullins. It's going to be somebody like that. I don't think Mateo is going to be a full year guy. I don't think John Birdie is going to be a full year guy.
Mateo could do it if he got on base. If he got on base and was actually like a semi, you know, competent hitter, he's just so bad.
Well, yeah, and that's my point.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we could see Mookie Betts go for a 30-30 season this year.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
So,
I got one more on the hitter side that we go over to pitchers real quick, but Miguel Vargas leads the league in walks. He's got nine so far.
Can I ask you a question about that? Is he actually swinging the bat yet?
Yeah, it's funny because in spring training, he had a little hand injury and his manager told him not to swing the bat, but just go up there, see the live pitching. And he took multiple walks in spring training without even having any intention of swinging the bat. So hopefully it doesn't turn into a situation where he just becomes so passive that all he can do is stand up at the plate and not swing the bat. But to me, it shows this guy is very patient, and he's not like a lot of other rookies who are, you know, trying to impress people, trying to swing the bat and make things happen. This guy's like content to accept his walks and
yeah, he's not pulling a Jordan Walker right now, who has really not been patient at all.
Yeah.
Jordan Walker's got incredibly lucky so far that he's got five hits and he's hit the ball really hard when he does make contact. So like he's getting lucky there, but yeah, patience is something that is key as a rookie. Like you don't want to be Nolan Gorman last year. You don't want to be, who's another one of these rookies that just went out and swung and missed a ton? Jared Kelnick.
Yeah.
You don't want to be Jared Kelnick. So.
Yep. Okay. So we got a few pitcher stats here too.
I was going to say also the other thing, Gunner's up that list too. He's at six walks.
Yeah. And he's always been a big walker in the minor leagues and everything. That's also super impressive. He's one of the youngest players in the American League. He's 21 years old and showing discipline like a 10-year vet.
All right, so pitchers, though, what do we got?
So atop the WHIP leaderboard is Jeffrey Springs, and it's pretty obvious the reason why, because he went out and pitched six no-hit innings against the Tigers on Saturday or Sunday, and he had a walk in there. Luis Castillo, honorable mention, also has a .17 WHIP tied with Springs. This Rays pitching staff looked phenomenal. I realized they were playing the Tigers, so let's not like get ahead of ourselves. But with McClanahan, Jeffrey Springs, Drew Rasmussen, all these guys have pitched and just absolutely dominated. And a guy like Springs is the most amazing example, I think, of those four, because he was a reliever for like 4 years in the major leagues, and he was not even like a super well-known reliever. And then the Rays were like, hey, we'll make you a starter, and now he's maybe a top 20 pitcher in the league, he's probably the most underrated pitcher in the league right now. People just don't know anything about Jeffrey Springs, but he dominated all season long, and he just followed it up with an amazing start to start this campaign.
Dang. But yeah, the WHIP leaderboard, though, like, kind of surprised to see is mate. So I think I might have it on all pitchers and not just starters. Hold on.
Yeah.
I don't think Mason Thompson is a starter, is he?
I don't even know who that is.
Yeah. So he's, no, he is not. He is a reliever on the Nationals. Because I was going to say, there's no way he's top five. But yeah, Dylan Cease with that absolutely dominant performance. Drew Rasmussen, Dustin May is pretty far up the list. Like, a lot of guys you're going to expect here. You've got some guys who've done some pretty good stuff in their first appearance, and we'll see how that goes. Like Johnny Brito for the Yankees. No idea who he is.
Yeah.
I assume he's a rookie.
He's a rookie, and he's kind of thrown into the starting role because they've got several injuries in that rotation right now. And he had a great start to start his career, I guess.
Yeah. Germán Márquez is not a sub one whip guy. I can tell you that right now.
But. Yeah, I think it's this one I probably shouldn't have picked out. I just want to talk about Jeffrey Springs. I mean, it's basically based off one start.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. So another one based off one start is strikeouts. And I was impressed to see that Logan Webb struck out 12 guys against the Yankees in his first start. That was cool because Logan Webb, while he is a very good pitcher, strikeouts not like a huge part of his game. He only struck out 20.7% last year. And then he comes out and does 12 strikeouts this year. So has he turned over a new leaf? It's probably too soon to tell, but something I'm keeping an eye on here.
Well, and that game itself was pretty interesting because that was Garrett Cole versus Logan Webb, and both starters had over 10 Ks on opening day. I think it was like the third or fourth time that's ever happened. So.
Jeffrey Springs also had 12 strikeouts, so another mention of him.
And then Otani with the casual 10, Dylan Cease with the casual 10.
Yes. Strikeouts are actually up this year from last year. Just slightly, so.
Nick Lodolo with 9. That's something you like to see.
Oh, yeah.
So, I'm hoping that he keeps his homers per 9 down this year. So, I think that's going to be the killer for him.
100% agree, yeah. And then the last one, innings pitched. 5 guys have had 7 inning starts this year. The 5 guys, Aaron Civale, Graham Ashcraft, Dustin May, Seth Lugo and Nick Martinez. Those last two are like the really surprising ones because those are the 4 and 5 starters for the Padres. So if your 4 and 5 starters are giving you 7 inning performances, I mean, that rotation is phenomenal.
Yeah, well, and then today, the first game through the second time through the rotation for some of these teams, Sandy Alcantara, I think, just won a complete game, didn't he?
I didn't check, but he was pitching in the 8th, yeah. Let's see.
So,
yeah, they finished the game 1-0, and he pitched.
Chat's saying he finished complete game shutout. So
game shutout. Yep.
Yeah. So Sandy is already pretty far up the list. So, although I'm not seeing him
because he only pitched like 4 innings in his first start.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
5.2 in his first start. So. But yeah, I fully expect to see Sandy lead the majors in innings pitched again this year.
Yeah, it's going to be him or Garrett Cole most likely.
But yeah, I think overall, looking at the just the leaderboards for the first time through the rotation, really, we're not seeing anything crazy, which I think is interesting. Like the good pitchers are good. The bad pitchers are bad. I'm curious, based on that game, that opening day game in St. Louis, I'm curious to see just how far down the list guy like what's his name? Alek Manoah and Miles Michaelis are, because they were getting knocked around pretty good. So let's see. Jack Flaherty is at a 1.4 after his 7-walk game.
Wait, what stat is that?
Whip.
Oh, whip.
Yeah. Jack Flaherty walked 7 batters and did not give up a run.
That was one of the worst no-hit like performances I think I've ever seen.
Yeah. And then Jordan Hicks came in and walked 3 more to load the bases. And then the Cardinals managed to win that game. Like, I do not understand that at all.
I think the Cardinals are going to have a lot of 9-8 games this season.
Yes, they are. It's going to be miserable for me because I like pitching.
This is not the year for pitching. I think that might be one of the takeaways from this year. Like, there's been a bunch of home runs this year, even in the early going. I don't know if that's weather related. Walk rates are up. Who knows what's going on with the ball? Like, that. I don't think this is going to be anything like 2021 year of the pitcher.
Yeah, no, this is back. Feeling.
And then in addition, with all the rules changes, favor offense. So that's what we're going to see this year.
Yeah. So going back to that whole first 4 days of the season stats that Jeff Passan had posted here on April 3rd, through 4 days of 2022, the average or like the triple slash for the league was 230 batting average, 308 on base, 374 slug. Through 2023's first 4 days, we were already at 245, 323, and 292. So we're at 15 points higher on average in OBP and 20 points higher on slug.
And 392, right, I assume.
What did I say?
You said 292.
Oh, yeah, 392. My bad. We're about 20 points higher on slug. And it's the cold part of the year. So that slug is just going to keep going up as we get into the dog days of summer here. If the average stays about 15 points higher, you're naturally going to see your slug percentage go up. You're naturally going to see your OBP go up. This is going to be a huge offensive year. So I don't know if it's necessarily going to be record-setting home run totals per team like we saw back in 2019. Something tells me, no, we're not going to get that far. Yeah. But I don't think that we're only going to have 340 home run guys this year. I think we're going to see some guys that are hitting about 325 by the end of the season, if not a little bit higher. Like, I think the leaders in the Triple Crown categories are going to have crazy numbers, I think is what I'm willing to say right now.
Yeah, I'm on board. I know you said you like pitching. I like pitching too, but it's going to make the 7-inning shutouts, the complete game shutouts that we saw from Sandy today. It's going to make those even more special, I think. I'm good with offense being up. That's more exciting to me.
Fair, but I do like the days of seeing guys go 9 innings once every week or two.
For sure. Like,
just change it up. Like, if we had a game, if we were able to mix it up where it's like once a week, we're going to see someone go 9 innings. Another day of the week, we're going to see like 19 runs scored. I'm all in. I want craziness. I don't necessarily want to see the same game every day.
No.
So.
Yep. So we'll be definitely keeping an eye on all these rule changes. I mean, it's been 4 or 5 games for these teams. There's so much more we're going to get out of a full season. Actually, it's going to take probably several years to like understand really the effects of all these rules. Plus, with them all happening at the same time, it makes it all the more challenging. But we'll try to
Will all these rules still exist in 7 years? Probably not. We change stuff every year just because we can.
Yeah.
But who knows?
So thank you so much for joining us, and we'll be back with you next week.
If you enjoy the podcast, please subscribe on your favorite podcasting app or YouTube to make sure you don't miss any future episodes. Join the conversation on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at Getaway Day Pod. If you enjoy card collecting, check out our sister YouTube channel at Getaway Day Cards.